This is why we love racing in all its forms.
And it's Lock and Varats, Pride's Easy Feed Victoria Cup.
The rail now for Zipping Rambo goes through in the Sandown Cup.
Twilight Payment, what a ride, what a win in a cup we'll never forget.
For the next hour, RSN is cracking the codes.
We are indeed, and it is Caulfield Giddies Day. I reckon it's... Everyone calls Turnbull Stakes Day moving day, but to me, this is when the really big stuff starts with the Caulfield Guineas today, Caulfield Cup next week, and then we move to the Valley and Flemington, and then we go to the beach for summer, and that's where I'll be meeting Dan and Simone. I think down at maybe Point Addis or something, Simone. How are you?
Good, thank you, Matt, and good morning to you. Good morning to you too, Dan.
Well. Good morning, Simone. Hello, Matt.
I accidentally said Point Addis, Dan, but it is a naturist reserve, you might say.
Well, I won't be heading there. I can give you the big tip.
I once knew someone who went down there all the time. Creep.
MS?
No, it wasn't me. There's one Sunnyside down at Mornington as well, which is right next to Pinecliff Training Stables, and they quite often swim the horses down there. And there's saggy old blokes down there. It's never, never good.
Is that appropriate then that you're talking about getting stripped and Caulfield Guineas has provided Aberidi at 250-1 and more recently we had a 100-1 winner in Mighty Boss. So stripped on the track on Caulfield Guineas Day and anyone that backed our Poetic Prince and stripped at your favourite beach as well.
Yes, indeed. Did we not on this show a year ago, was it who was the trainer of Aberidi again, Dan?
Steve Watkins.
Steve Watkins. I think we had him on, didn't we, to talk about Aberidi's win at 200-1, and
we did. And I've just
what episode was it, Simone? You always note these down accurately.
Well,
ballpark
go back,
average.
Go back about 52. Off, yeah. What are we up to? We're up to 114. So, but I remember, and I haven't got it in front of me, but remember the Aberidi was considered one of the best gate crashes of all time, and. Like a person turning up at a mate's party, taking off with the missus, taking home with a collection of DVDs and drinking all the beer and having a good time and leaving everyone else in his wake. And that was what the description of Aberidi was on that day.
And surfacing at Point Addis the next day. Yes.
Could have done that too.
Exactly right. What's the equivalent of Caulfield Guineas Day? I love it when I ask you guys questions without... it's like a semi-final day. Is it the... Is it the crown? What would be the harness equivalent of the Caulfield Guineas, Dan? You've got your derby, we do, and so I think the dogs do.
Yeah. Well,
what's the guineas?
Well, we've got a big night tonight at Bendigo, which we'll get onto shortly with Derby and Oaks, but that meeting's been changed around a fair bit in the last 12 months particularly. Caulfield Guineas, I think, in Victoria, we have grown up for that being the biggest three-year-old race in Victoria. A bit like the Blue Diamond's always been the best two-year-old, the Caulfield Guineas, for us in Victoria, best three-year-old race. So with that in mind, look, I don't know, maybe in part towards a Vic Bred or even a Breeder's Crown to a degree. I'd say it would be related to that.
Why didn't Harness adopt the term Guineas when they adopted the terms Oaks and Derby, I wonder?
I don't know. Well, I suppose they've got Vic Bred series and also Breeders' Crown series. So I could say the same about Thoroughbred Racing. Why didn't Thoroughbred Racing adopt, you know, a Vic Bred series? Well, they do have the Vobis, though, or a Breeders' Crown series. But, yeah, the Guineas is... there are a couple of places there are races termed Guineas, but then... None of them that I can recall that are of group status, or if they are, they're a lower group status.
Yeah, because the term Guineas would have been around for hundreds of years. Simone, what's the greyhound equivalent of a Caulfield Guineas, do you think? Like the second best race for greyhounds? For ones of a certain age.
Silver Chief would go close,
Silver Chief,
wouldn't it?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, it's age restricted, like the Laurels are. Perhaps the Harrison Dawson and the Sapphire Crown. We don't traditionally have, or we don't have specific races for three-year-old greyhounds because a lot of them are probably, not far off retiring. Some obviously race a lot longer, 3 years old. Some of them may be just hitting their straps right then or at 3.5. But because their longevity on the racetrack isn't that of a horse, we tend to look at the age restricted events for the two-year-olds more so or a bit younger. So perhaps the Harrison Dawson and the Sapphire Crown may be the equivalent, but I've probably got that wrong. But off the top of my head, because I know you love asking these questions, Matt, and I do usually like being a little bit prepared, but
Oh, that was quip, Dan. That was a wasn't even a gentle quip. That was a quip.
No, that was a jab.
Oh, it wasn't.
That was a poke in the ribs. That was a poke in the ribs.
It wasn't. It wasn't. It wasn't. We do it to you all the time, don't we? But Dan, we've always got our notes in front of us, haven't we? And we throw them at Matt too. So I guess it's even.
And I dodge the notes and leave them where they fall. So Simone, more uplifting. What's been happening in greyhound racing this week?
There's been plenty of greyhound racing action this week. Adelaide Cup last night. The Great Chase heats have begun, and the Great Chase is a great community event. And unfortunately, the last 2 years, the people from the different community groups that have intellectual and physical disabilities that love getting out to the track every year. It's a big event for many of them and their carers as well, and a big logistical effort too. Unfortunately, they haven't been able to get to the track this year or last year, but they have still participated in activities via Zoom. So the Great Chase raises money for some of these community groups, and they walk away with maybe $10,000 if they're matched with the winning dog of the grand final in a couple of weeks. So heats of those. The Battlers Cup at Bendigo on Wednesday night, the heats, a 12-race program full of these greyhounds, in Tier 3 greyhounds, so your lower-graded greyhounds, fighting it out for next week's final of a $5,000 winner's purse. And I know we talked a couple of weeks ago about the stake money increases in Victoria, which has been fabulous. They came into effect the 1st of October. But it just goes to show that even though, you know, some think we're rewarding mediocrity, there is a place for these greyhounds in the landscape of racing, the Tier 3s, and why not reward those trainers who are doing the same amount of work, probably travelling further with maybe one or two dogs. They're usually hobby trainers and owners, and they've got a chance at some decent prize money. So a big festival at Bendigo and Carnival at the moment.
Just on that, the... And I love that because, you know, the stats are everything. And, you know, in the racing world, 70% of the horses compete in the country, so they should be the ones most protected. And Dan, there's the Hambletonian and the Humbletonian. And then in... Yeah. It's shameful, really, and I don't know how it happened, but Ballarat had a race called the Hotham, which was for the slowest of the slow, a bit like the Greyhound Series that Simone just mentioned and the Humbletonian. There has to
be... There's one at Swan Hill as well, the Droughtbreaker.
Yep, the Droughtbreaker, and I think there's one or two... I just think it's such an important incentive and an encouragement for those of us who are at the bottom of the game. And I say us, meaning me, because of my picnic associations and so on, that there's something there for us as well. And I don't know what the real circumstances were with the getting rid of the Hotham up at Ballarat, whether it was from Racing Victoria or the Turf Club or what it was, but or even the sponsor, Sportsbet. But Dan, just on this subject, it is so important that the bottom end of the industry is given a little boost from time to time. And these series are really, you know, in the whole spectrum of the sport, Dan, they're important to look after, aren't they?
There's a point of difference. There's far more maidens in the racing or any of the three codes than there are any other class of horse or greyhound. So it is, with that in mind. It's funny. I think that there are horses... today, you know, maidens in all three codes, there's more animals going around. So it's as competitive enough to win a race. It was probably harder to win a maiden, to be quite truthful, 30 years ago. But the times that the maidens are going now are 100 metres better than what it used to be. But it's still tough to win. And that's why there's always more maidens on a program, a country program, than there is any other class of race.
Simone, what was your reaction? And this will take us to one of our guests this morning as well. And I'll ask Dan's reaction as well. Mine was, I was really annoyed when you heard that Oakbank was, that South Australia was going to abandon jumps racing in the state full stop. And also the byproduct of that was the famous Oakbank Easter Carnival, where the Great Eastern Steeplechase dates back to 1876. What was your reaction when you heard that they were going to dump the jumps in South Australia?
A little bit of disbelief, to be honest. And look, I'm not right across it like you two would be. But to me, it sounds like almost doing away with jumps at Warrnambool. Obviously, there's less horses over in South Australia that are jumping. But that doesn't mean that the horses from Victoria and other states would head to Oakbank for the carnival. It sounds like it's putting a nail in the coffin of history and tradition. And I... can't really imagine how some of these trainers must be feeling, horses that they've got there that they're targeting for Oakbank, and just the carnival atmosphere. Isn't that what people go there for as well, the spectacle also? Is it an animal rights, bowing to animal rights in this instance? Is it political? I'm not sure, but I know we're going to find out this morning, and you've obviously got a lot more knowledge on this, Matt.
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff going on here, Dan, with political stuff in the background and, you know, suggestions that ultimatums were given to clubs. We'll fund you, but you got to get rid of the jumps, all that sort of stuff. And the claim from Racing SA that there were no jumps participants in South Australia and no jockeys, well, a little bit of research from some committed jumps people over there has produced up to 40 jumps horses and 19 jumps trainers and five or six participants who wanted to come over there and ride in South Australia, but haven't been able to because of COVID and now the loss of jumps racing and the lack of trials and shoots and all sorts of things. So there's so much to the story. But for me, it was history crashing that was my first reaction. My kids and I went, when we stayed at Goolwa last summer, we went up to Harndorf and then we walked a lap of the Oakbank track and hung around there and sat on the lawn. And I'd been there 100 years earlier for the Easter jumps races as well. And it is the most... Sorry?
I thought you were looking old these days. You just said you'd been there 100 years earlier.
How would you describe that one, Dan? Was that a poke in the ribs or was that a drive-by?
I was trying to be funny. You know I'm not very funny. I'm trying to be, you know, add something to the conversation.
We think you're very funny, Simone.
Thanks.
I wandered around and sat around, and it's the beautiful old buildings and the amazing, tight but spectacular track, and 1876. I mean, it predates a lot of things, and I was devastated about the jumps, but more about the precinct itself and how history can be so easily taken away by various agendas, you know?
A very special place, Oakbank, and I'd been there a number of times through the late 80s and early 90s, took some horses there, spent time at the racetrack. It's amazing in itself, but to the people that camp there during the course of the week, there are thousands of people that camp at the site. On the morning of the race, remember coming with a horse float with a number of horses in it, and the cars are banked back outside the public gates, 4 kilometres. They virtually go back to the main highway, banked back for 6 or 7 kilometres, stopped in the middle of the road on their lane until the gates open at 8 a.m. or so. In between the races, everyone would be on the track. They'd be kicking the football around. It was one of the greatest atmospheres you'd ever get. And we were getting 60, 70,000 people on a public holiday Monday when traditionally the Great Eastern was run and won. And what was celebrated was the jumps races on that occasion, or in those instances, and had done for many years. But we used to have the Grand National jumps races in Adelaide at Victoria Park initially, and then eventually they were swapped. And where do they go now? And same thing happened in Victoria. I mean, as much as all the jumps racing has is subsiding, and this conversation's about Oakbank, but Melbourne Cup Day, traditionally was your cup hurdle. You used to have a cup hurdle, an Oaks Day hurdle as well, but years gone by, there'd be a hurdle and a steeple on Melbourne Cup Day. There'd be a hurdle and a steeple on every major race day through the Spring Carnival in Melbourne, at Caulfield, at Moonee Valley, at Flemington. And I think the last one we had was probably in the early 2000s at Flemington, guys. So that's changed. We hardly get jumps racing in Melbourne anymore. It's almost swept away to, you know, as much as Warrnambool and Ballarat, and they do their best, and your Casterdens and Cole Rains. But, you know, to a fair degree, it's sort of swept out of the limelight, so it's not in the city areas anymore, which is terribly unfortunate. And I think a lot of even the racing or the hurdle racing, jumps racing that's continuing in Victoria has been responsible for a very passionate crew, but significant stables have also been able to prop it up and keep it alive. And from Oakbank's point of view, it's Oakbank, isn't it? What's Oakbank without jumps racing?
It's nothing. It's a skinny little track with flat racing. And Simone, there is reality, though, as well. And the glory days that Dan spoke about is when I went, the only time I've been there for the races as well. And it was public holiday, crazy, huge crowd of 70,000, 30,000 on the Saturday. The reality is that those crowds have plummeted in recent years, albeit still they get 10,000 on the Saturday. They've dumped the Monday because every sport, let alone Oakbank is struggling to get public holiday crowds. People are doing different things now, but even 10,000 people is still bigger than any other crowd they get in South Australia.
Hey, Matt, huge, huge night of harness racing tonight. It's a mouth-watering evening with four Group 1 races. We've got the Oaks, the Derby, the Victoria Cup. Yep, that's right, the Victoria Cup. And of course, the Bill Collins Trotters Mile. So they're the four races on the program. Thought we might just have a trip down memory lane, and I'm sure you'll remember these races, but to go back to 1995, and the race caller, Brian Markovic, is a part owner with Paces Australia, which was Terry Henderson, of course, OTI nowadays, of the winner, Blue Eagle, 1995 Victoria Derby.
Around the turn towards the 250, third quarter winner, 30.2 in the Derby, and Bastille Beggar on the outside reached the lead. Late bidders under pressure, Blue Eagle in behind them, still needing a run. Now he's about to get out towards the 150. Bastille Beggar hit the lead. Blue Eagle on the outside is now after him, followed by Rifle Run running home at the 100-metre mark, and Bastille Beggar tackled by Blue Eagle. Blue Eagle ranged up on the outside, grabbed the lead, and the Derby's ours. Blue Eagle wins the Victoria Derby. God bless.
Must be an amazing feeling. Like, Brian Markovic didn't hide the fact that his joy that he was a part owner of the horse, and good on him, who cares, you know, in the context of the race course. So well done to him. But Brian Martin with Fields of Omar reminds me of, how do you keep a lid on your enthusiasm? You must have called your own horses winning from time to time.
Yeah, look, I have, but I suppose Group 1 racing is a different level again and a different experience, which I've been a part of. I haven't called my own winning a Group 1, but I've been close enough too. And it's not the easiest of situations. Even a race caller like myself have got a wonderful appreciation of what Brian Markovic and Brian Martin as well with Fields of Omar have gone through. I think they've been superhuman performances to keep intact their emotions, because race calling is very much emotional. We were the incentive we got to be calling was through the heroes, which were the horses, hence why we even wanted to own a horse. And to be in that position that they were in to call those races is just quite incredible. That'd be career highlights, both from a race calling point of view and obviously as an ownership point of view. So it's not easy, Matt. Everyone thinks I'm as cool as a cucumber, but the few times that I've called my own in a Group 1, it's been a little bit nerve-wracking, but I think I robbed myself of the moment of owning a Group 1 horse as well. It's in the back of your mind, but your job is obviously to call the races. But I would like to get more used to that happening, but it's a difficult situation just the same.
You'd rather be watching it on the couch or in the grandstands than calling it, wouldn't you? You'd like to separate yourself in an ideal world to really cut loose.
It's a Group 1. And you want to call it because that's where your profession lies. You want to call Group 1 races. You don't want to stand down or miss out either. So, as I said, you're caught with doing your job properly, which is what usually wins out, Matt. But when you're thinking or dreaming of your own horse winning a Group 1, and let's face it, we all do, don't we?
Exactly.
And the Vic Cup is on tonight as well, Victoria Cup. It's only been moved to this date for a couple of years. It's a race, and it's a great race. It's been a wonderful race over the years, but it hasn't really had a time of the year that it could call its own. I can remember four different months that it's been running over the years, and that's December, January, February, and now into October. But here's... I plucked out one that I'm sure you'll remember, and everyone will know this famous horse, and he was probably more famous for winning an Inter-Dominion than any other race. But in 2001, he came back and he won the Victoria Cup, Shaker Maker.
400 to go. Courage Under Fire's in front. Shaker Maker whip right around the outside. Goes up four wide. Lombo Rapid a second. Then Safe and Sound. And Black Cam third quarter 28.5. Courage Under Fire called on. Shaker Maker zoomed up on the outside. Hare's at it again and Yule Star wide out. Courage Under Fire. Shaker Maker at it again. Safe and Sound getting the run. Shaker Maker in front. Safe and Sound diving at it again wide out. Safe and Sound. Shaker. Shaker. Shaker Maker and nose to Safe and Sound.
Handy little minor cast of stars there, Dan. Outside of Shaker Maker, Yule Star went on to become almost an all-time great. Safe and Sound, yep. Courage Under Fire. Wow, epic.
Yeah, And I think we only heard half the field there. They were they were super, super duper fields, and I'd say the 12th horse in that race would be second favourite at worst for this year's edition. King of Swing, great horse, will run the favourite, but it's a challenge from outside of the back line. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful program tonight. I think they've got a quaddy pool estimated at about $400,000, so it's well worth getting involved. Ladies in Red and her stable mate, Speech Music, Joanna Clash in the Oaks. And the Derby's a ripper as well. So, and the Bill Collins Trotters Mile with the Majestuoso, who's the new star of the trotting ranks. It's a great card, and it's run at Bendigo this year. That's right, Bendigo, as what? Were the last week's heats because of the curfew still existing in Melbourne. Right. It ends up, and I think it's appropriate, Victoria Oaks, Victoria Derby, Victoria Cup. It represents the whole of the state, and we're probably in the heart of it in Bendigo tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Simone cracked it because we were asking too many. I was asking too many questions without notice and all that sort of stuff. So she slammed the phone, Dan.
She can be like that.
And she's walked out to go and feed the dogs or mess around and sort of cuss under her breath and all that sort of stuff. So we're going to take a break. Craig's going to counsel. He's going to have a little chat, text via text, and then we're going to see if Simone can join us at the other end of this break.
Loving their racing, pacing and chasing. Matt Stewart, Dan Malicki and Simone Fisher. Cracking the codes.
One of our next guests has been on the show before and she's a registered Racing Victoria thoroughbred retrainer, finds plenty of homes for these off-the-track horses, but she's also just started up a new charity called RACED, which does stand for Racehorse Aftercare Education Diversity. Like many of the retrainers, they're always looking for funds to help them get many more horses through the program and into great homes. And I'm very pleased to say that Fiona McIntyre joins us this morning on Cracking the Codes. Good morning, Fiona.
Good morning, Simone.
An exciting time for you. I know you've put so much work and effort and time into these thoroughbreds and promoted them so beautifully with Precedence being your number one horse who's travelled all over the countryside, even won an award at the British Horse Show last year. So he's been worldwide. But an exciting time for you because you've just registered a charity that will help you get more horses through the system and hopefully ease your funds up a little bit. That I know you work full time and all your wage does go into these horses. It aren't always yours as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really exciting time for me. As you said, I am really passionate about providing opportunities for these retired racehorses, and I wanted to do more. So this was one way I thought that it's a possibility for people to get involved and try and do more and more in this space.
Fiona, I love the acronym, that RACED. Did you come up with that name? It's really appropriate, Racehorse Aftercare Education Diversity.
Yeah, absolutely. I love an acronym. I can actually claim the RESET acronym that Racing Victoria used for their program. So I'm quite well known to Racing Vic for my acronyms. It was sort of something that I wanted to have something that meant what it means, and I sort of stepped away from the word retraining. I know that some people say, but these horses are trained. Yes, they are trained. They're trained to race, but when they actually step away from racing, they need to diversify their education. So I sort of had a play on words, and I thought, actually, that works really well.
You got us going now. You know what we're like. So the one that I didn't like was my kids' primary school. It was Cheltenham East Primary School, and it was SEPS, but it always read as KEPS, and it just wasn't a good one. It wasn't a good one. So anyway, you have come up with a great one with RACED, and it does, as Dan said, it sums it up. You know, this is a transition time for horses. Just on the suitability of thoroughbreds, we had a discussion on RSN a few weeks ago. Joe McKinnon wrote a column about it, and we discussed the potential difficulties of thoroughbreds transitioning to off-the-track horses and into equestrian pursuits and things like that. And Precedence seems to be a glittering example of how successful it can be. But is it a difficult transition for many?
So, and that's probably another reason for me sort of expanding what I'm doing with these horses. I actually don't necessarily find that. But I think what happens is we've seen this fantastic promotion of the off-the-track horses. More people are getting involved. More people are wanting these horses. But not everyone has the skill set to do the retraining. It certainly, in my opinion, takes a certain person to be able to transition the horses. And one of the things I've been doing this year is taking horses from people that have got a horse straight off the track and they've sent them to me to begin their transition and do that training. So I see that there was a bit of a gap there. I read Joe's article, and I know Joe quite well. I didn't necessarily agree with a lot of the things that were in there. There are the occasional horse that will not transition for whatever reason. They don't cope well with it. But, look, I've done probably, 20 horses, and out of those 20 horses, and this is in recent times, I've had one horse that hasn't coped particularly well. But with him, I've just, again, using the word reset, to turn him out and start it again, and he's now coming along in leaps and bounds. So sometimes it just takes a little bit of time, and it takes someone that's got that skill set to be able to transition them.
Fiona, we might have to encourage the dairy farmers to get the milk and horse carts again, create even more opportunities for the horses to be rehomed. With the horses you get, are they primarily geldings? I mean, how are you placed with mares or anyone for retraining for that matter? And even the odd, colt or stallion, because there's still a lot of horses that don't end up as commercial stallions. And some of them can be quite placid. Not all of them are rogue, bullish types. Do you draw the line anywhere, or is it just down to the individual horse?
So I don't have any colts or stallions. But some people, I have seen some go on to be used to breed performance horses, show horses. So there is a small gap there for some of those horses. Generally speaking, the ones that we get through have been gelded before they arrive. The majority of my horses are geldings. However, having said that, this year I've actually had three mares, which we don't often get mares through. But these are horses that, which is quite good. Not all mares need to be bred from, have the bloodline, have the ability. So, but they are, again, really valuable in terms of post-racing. They make fantastic competition horses or pleasure horses, but they also can breed some fantastic crossbreds. So some people will crossbreed them with a pony type. And, yeah, so there is certainly a space there for the mares. They're quite different to the geldings, so it's kind of quite enjoyable having some girls around at the moment.
Fiona, with the launch of the charity, what does that mean?
We don't find that usually on a Saturday.
I'll stop it. I've had a crack at him this morning, so he's getting me back. You know what it's like here. But Fiona, what does it mean with the launch of the charity now? I'm sure there's people that would love to help in rehoming horses, retraining, but just aren't in a position to do so. But financially, they may be able to offer some assistance. So if people are, happy to support your charity, what does that mean for you then with the funds? Like, how does that filter through to the horses?
Yeah, so I have a property, a large property, but I'm limited within the number of horses that I take on at any one time because I am self-funded, apart from some funding I get through Racing Victoria when I'm retraining one of their reset horses. So I was finding myself having to say, no, I'm sorry, I can't take an extra horse because of the cost of the feed, basically, at the end of the day. So I've been contacted by a lot of people wanting to offer some support in any way, which is, again, another reason for setting up the charity. So any of the funds that come through, and I don't know what that's going to look like, Simone, to be honest, but it will go straight into the horses as far as feed, rugs, any veterinary care, and then hopefully if it sort of grows enough, I'll be able to then tap into a bit of a network of retrainers and be able to send some horses to people and fund that. I think, there's only so much an individual can do, but I think a collaboration is definitely the key to making a difference in this space.
Fiona, with the numbers of ex-racehorses needing the next stage of their life to be rehomed, retrained, whatever, is it difficult to keep up with the demand? Because I think there's a foal crop of about 15,000 a year and a lot of them don't make it. So there would be, I would imagine, a large number of horses that would would need this transition. Is the market strong enough to absorb these horses?
Well, it's interesting. When you talk of numbers like that, it is quite big. There's certainly the demand out there. I'm contacted daily by people looking for a particular type of horse, which I don't always have, and I've helped rehome horses straight from the track that haven't come to me, but the trainers have gotten contact, and I've been able to rehome them really quickly. So there's a demand out there for the horses. As to what that looks like with those numbers, I can't probably really comment too much. I only know the ones that I've sort of been working with. But as I said earlier, I have been sort of not being able to take on as many physically due to the cost. But I think it's growing all the time, and there's new things becoming available for these horses and new opportunities, which then just creates that flow-on effect.
Fiona, you've been an absolutely terrific ambassador for racing and also horses off the track. I know you've won awards. I can't think of what the official title of them have been, but Lady in Racing or what you would know. You've been terrific, and hear the passion. We can see the passion and the way that you turn the horses out. And anyone that does follow you on socials or would like to follow you on socials, you don't just hop on and off the track horse in the paddock. You've got a nice brow band on, you're beautifully turned out, so you absolutely are a great role model for anyone looking to purchase horses and also those people retraining. You're really setting the standard high, and I know the care that you give them, so it's been wonderful having you talk about your new charity Racehorse Aftercare Education Diversity this morning. But do you just want to give a shout out and let people know how they can actually donate if they want to?
Yes, certainly. So I'm just in the process of launching a website, so there'll be details on that that website. I've just started a Twitter page. The handle there is Raced Horses, and there will also be more social media. So I will certainly get that out there, and I was hoping to have the website live today, but unfortunately things take a little bit longer than I sometimes would like. But I'd certainly suggest anyone pops onto Twitter or and look at the Raced Horses, and I'll have more information being posted as it becomes available.
And you're right, Simone. Fiona was the Lady of Racing 2020.
There you go, Lady of Racing. So
there's,
terrific.
There she is with Giles and Catron.
The law. She was the law. She was the law of the land, the LOR.
Yes,
LOR.
Yes, the acronym's flowing thick and fast this morning now, Fiona.
They take on, don't they?
They do. I was trying to think of some really creative ones that I've heard, have thought about. I'll Google great acronyms and come back and sound like a genius after the break, probably.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much, and thank you on behalf of all the horses out there who are transitioning, and you've done an amazing job, and here, you know, and so great that you have been awarded with these gongs, such as the law, because it's well deserved, and good on you.
Thanks so much. It's an absolute pleasure, and as Simone said, it is something I'm really passionate about, and if we can sort of try and make a difference together, then all the better for the horses.
And you know what Simone has never been, don't you? She's never been the Lady of Racing.
And I never will be.
You said that bit too. Good on you, Fiona.
Pleasure.
As we discussed earlier, there's the gavel has come down on Oakbank, pending the salvage plan instituted by Sandy McGregor and the Jumps Racing Association. So no more jumps in South Australia, no more Great Eastern, no more Harry DeYoung, no more pilgrims to the Adelaide Hills. And someone who was desperate to do it in the next few years as part of her jumps trainer bucket list is trainer Amy McDonald, who's absolutely spewing that the jumps are off at Oakbank, and she's going to have a chat to us about it. Amy, what was your reaction when you heard the news about Oakbank and the future of jumps racing in South Australia?
Honestly, I was just heartbroken. It was like breaking up with your high school boyfriend. It rips you right to the core. It's something that you look forward to every year. You've got wonderful memories there, and you just always probably take for granted that it's always going to be there, but I just can't believe that they've made this decision.
Do you still have lingering feelings for the high school boyfriend? It sounds like there's a regret there, Amy.
No, not at all, but everybody knows what it's like to have your first love, don't they?
Oh, Dan and I are still waiting to. Oh no, Dan's good to go. I'm the only loner at the moment.
Going strong after about 28 or 29 years. Amy, look, I've been to Oakbank many times over the years, and it's a special place. There's no other way to describe it. And historically, it would have been on a bucket list for anybody that had never been there before, and that well, the opportunity to experience it. Well, it's not going to come anymore. And you fit into that boat, don't you? Have you had runners there before?
No, I haven't. It's been a 3-year plan. As we all know, that steeplechases aren't made overnight. And I have one or two now that, or one in particular that I was looking at aiming towards the Oakbank Carnival leading into the May Carnival at Warrnambool. But that aside, just to have a runner there, regardless of what sort of horse it is, steeplechaser or hurdler, as a jump trainer or someone who's passionate about being involved with jump racing, that's one of the places where you want to be every year. I'm dumbfounded. I'm lost for words that they haven't even consulted anybody in this decision, especially their own participants in South Australia. It's insane.
What's your understanding of the... It's such a confusing issue because the motivation for Racing South Australia, as stated, is lack of participation, financially unviable, no horses, no jockeys. But the evidence has come out that there are at least 19 trainers who have or have wannabe jumpers. There's a lack of trials and COVID's made it difficult. There's 4 or 5 jockeys who want to base themselves there, and there's upwards of 35 horses. So that argument doesn't seem to ring true. You wonder whether there might be something a little bit more political behind the scenes. What's your interpretation of the decision-making process?
I think it's a handful of people, I'm guessing, who have decided that for their brand, it's not beneficial and it's too hard. Jump racing, it's a hard thing to get qualified. It's a hard thing to get horses fit, to get the right horses. You've got to have... We are lucky enough in Victoria to have the system behind us that we have opportunity to trial. We have good staying races, a good variety of staying races over and different grades that we can run our horses in. South Australia don't offer that to their trainers, which makes it incredibly hard for them to get them fit, to get them qualified and then to go to the races. And to throw in that there's no numbers, what a load of absolute bollocks. That is completely untrue. There are so many people over there, even just since this announcement, who have messaged me. And I mean, what am I going to do for them? But they're telling me they've got 3 or 4 horses they want to go jumping with next year. They weren't able to get their ticket this year. And it's so frustrating because the pool of people and horses is there. South Australia are not willing to entertain it for whatever reason. And I'm sure it'll come to light sooner or later. But their argument for it is rubbish, in my opinion.
It seems, Amy, that there's so many horses in Victoria alone that would definitely head to Oakbank. So you would think for a big carnival over the Easter weekend that they would take the opportunity to have the jumps racing on because it's such a spectacle. You get people holidaying, you get people that may go for the first time and be able to experience it. And the beauty of Oakbank is that South Australia don't need to rely just on South Australian horses. You've got horses around the Warrnambool way that don't have to make such a huge trip across the border.
Yeah. I do look, South Australia don't rely on South Australian horses anyway. You look at the fields at Mawsonville on a Saturday and see who's winning. There's a lot of Victorian horses that go there. Mm. And to say that that's the issue with jumps racing as well is complete and utter rubbish. And I just think jumps racing, if you're a fan of jumps racing and you are passionate about it like myself and most people I know and associate with, you'll go anywhere for the best carnival, for the best jumping, to watch the best horses. Just like spring racing, you'd go anywhere to watch those fast horses. So you've got this whole community of people, thousands of people that drive down to Warrnambool every year because it's a magnificent carnival. There's people that will drive to Oakbank and stay there because it's a magnificent carnival. Who doesn't want to go to Harndorf on the day after Easter Saturday and have a drink and go to the lolly shop and buy gifts for your kids? It makes me sad and angry. I just don't understand.
Yeah, and there's so many different threads of confusion with people as well. One is this obsession we have with wagering is God. If wagering is compromised, then people stop things from happening. And just because there's 4 or 5 fields in these jumps races, that the safety in jumps racing has improved. I was dead against jumps racing 10 years ago because too many horses were dying, basically. But the last decade has seen a terrific revival and greater safety and all that sort of stuff. So the argument of wagering, it's a display of great skill and there's history and all that sort of stuff. And Amy, the argument, as you guys just touched on, as Simone mentioned, what does it matter if the competitors come from the east? The crowd ostensibly comes from South Australia. They flood the hills up there. They pay through the gate. They sustain the race club. They contribute to the income. And in 2012, the economic benefit of the Oakbank Jumps Carnival was something like $13 million to South Australian coffers. That has come down considerably since the crowds have come down, but it's still got to be $6 or $7 million. That's not peanuts, is it?
Oh, absolutely not. And this is the thing. It just seems it's like I can't see the wood for the trees. Like, there's got to be an underlying issue or something, you know, behind the scenes that we're not being told, or something that's going on, because it doesn't make sense economically for the community around there. It doesn't make sense for the participants within the industry. It doesn't make sense for the club. Why would the club not want to have jumps racing? Like, it doesn't make sense. And the dots aren't connecting, and it'd be very interesting to see over the course of the next couple of weeks what the wash up is. And the worst thing is if they are dead set against the proposal that Sandy and the ADRA have put forward, an Easter Carnival in Victoria is going to thrive. It is going to be magnificent. And then they're going to say, well, geez, I wish that was us. It could have been you guys. Because you didn't do all the marketing and put the effort in and make it something great again, you've lost it.
Amy, do you think jumps racing will always be a contentious issue for people outside of the racing bubble and for some inside racing as well? Obviously with the safety and all of that, which Matt just said that it's come a long, long way in the last decade. Do you think that, if Oakbank loses its jumps, this is just another big nail in the coffin of racing in general?
Yeah, I do. I do. I mean, you've only got to look on social media that the aunties are already like, well, they're so glad they've come to their senses. Now just let's concentrate on two-year-old racing. Well, two-year-old racing, you could argue, is one of the biggest wagering events across the board. So you take out one little guy and it's going to affect the big guy. I just think you start knocking it on the head and getting rid of it, it's going to be a never-ending battle.
And it was a feeder for Warrnambool. Warrnambool starts early enough as, the grand final, but it's the first cab off the rank to have horses fit. A lot of them needed Oakbank. Amy, if they don't continue? I think one of the most interesting discussions at the moment is if Oakbank is gone, what does Victoria create? And there's been all sorts of suggestions of Cassett and Coleraine, even Pakenham, even a resurrection of the jump circuit at Yarra Valley. There is a famous old jumps race run at, I should have checked the name of it, the Great Western Steeplechase or something. It goes back to 1848 or something ridiculous insane like that. Should that be upgraded as some sort of a replacement for Oakbank and have it, maybe Cassett and Coleraine at Easter before Warrnambool? What do you imagine might be the perfect fit, or even an earlier Warrnambool carnival, like a prelude day over Easter for the Easter holiday makers? What would be the right alternative to Oakbank if that's the situation we find ourselves in?
I'm in two minds on this one. Obviously, my preference is Oakbank. However, if that wasn't available, I think to myself, oh, what would you like to see at Easter time? You'd like to see horses jumping hedges, but I don't think you're going to get a massive flock of tourists heading down towards that area of the state at Easter time. They're more likely to go into Melbourne or down to Warrnambool to the coast or something like that. So I'm sure whatever Racing Victoria and the AJRA decide, it'd be a very successful day. And I think there's a race at the Great Western is a fantastic race at Coleraine, really good race. I always look forward to that at the end of the year. There's also another race at Hamilton, I think. Oh no, sorry, it's at Pakenham, the Spencer Memorial. I mean, that could always be increased and made a bit more of a feature as a lead into Warrnambool Carnival itself. But there's plenty of options, and I honestly believe whichever one they chose, it'd be a raging success.
Hey, what happened to Flying Agent's campaign? He was spectacular early on, and then he just sort of, it just didn't quite, he didn't have the same level towards the end. What was the story with Flying Agent's campaign?
So in the Thackeray, if you know, he made a faulty jump at the second fence in the straight in front of the stands in the Thackeray, and he just tweaked a muscle in his back. So I was really pleased with his run at Pakenham in the Burke. I know he went out to favourite, and God knows why. He's a 58 rater against horses that are running group races on a flat track with 10 fences. But I was wrapped with his run at Pakenham, wrapped with his run in the Crisp, and that debacle before the national chase at Ballarat, that was the end of him sort of thing. He just wound himself up and pulled too hard through the run. So I wasn't that disappointed with his back end of the season. I know some of the punters thought he was invincible, but he's a horse, and that's what happens.
Amy, this horse that you've gifted, that Simone's got, and she's in love, it's First Crush.
Yes.
Talking about high school crushes and first loves, this all ties in very, very well, you know.
I want to find out who Amy's boyfriend was in high school. I think there's a flicker there still. Is this the horse that caused the controversy with Lee, the riding tactics and so on that caused that blow up on social media, or was that a different horse?
No, that was Felix Bay. Same colours, same ownership group. First Crush, he had a couple of runs over hurdles, but he was just too fancy. Like he would jump like a show jumper and not like a hurdler. So and he was a good galloper in his day, and it's really sad when you see a horse kicking around and they just keep going down in the rating and down in the rating and down in the rating. So we opted to retire the horse, and Paige Cartwright took him on for a little while, and now he's ended up in the perfect place.
Oh, well, I hope it's a perfect place. I hope I'm the perfect owner. We've had a couple of little floating issues, Amy, and...
Well, here we go, Amy. She's going to lean on you here.
No, I'm not. I've got it sorted. No, I think he was $100,000 as a yearling, so I'm thinking that he was probably never, ever floated in a straight load float, so the peasant's float. He's always in a truck or, at worst, an angle load. And for the first two trips, yeah, he walked straight on, and the day I picked him up from Paige, we looked at each other and thought, right, breaching doors up, tailgates up, let's go. And the other day I was heading out for a lesson and had the other horse loaded up, and he just wouldn't go on. So I didn't want to explode the situation and make it really, you know, terrible. So I entrusted a very good horseman down the Geelong area during the week, and he came out, and in 30 seconds, I've called him Gatsby now, so First Crushes, because he's a very dapper sort of a gentleman and a bit posh, I think. And he walked straight on the float. So just a few little groundwork issues where he was sort of pushing me around, but I think, you know, it's just another... It's with these horses retraining, like we spoke about earlier with Fiona McIntyre, it takes time, it takes patience, and you've got to just find what makes them click and what works, and they've got to be respectful and all that. So he is happy on the straight load when he was... Well, he's been happy when he's been on his trips, but it was just walking on, and he was probably just... you know, taking a little bit of advantage of me. So, but no, there's no, he's great. So I hope it's a perfect time here, but I just like him more and more every day, find out more and more about him. And
so Gatsby, things... did you have a crush on the Great Gatsby or Leonardo DiCaprio as the Great Gatsby?
Yeah, well, that's a good question, because he played a very good role, didn't he? Yeah.
And did he look, does Leonardo DiCaprio look anything like your high school boyfriend, Amy?
The negative.
She would have been with him still if he did, I'm sure.
Hey, don't go there, Simone. You just don't know. Hey, Amy, you are a workaholic. We all know that. You would never claim that, but we know how hard you work. A, have you got a Jericho horse, or B, is it a more relaxing time of year for you coming up when all the big flat horses are at the Spring Carnival? Is this a little bit of a step back time of year for you?
Well, ordinarily it would be, but I was pretty down on myself after the jump season, because I thought, aside from flying agent winning the Briley, which was amazing, I thought I'd had a pretty poor season. The horses I thought would perform didn't, and then a couple of them just ran a bit ordinary and got rid of them. But then I went back through, I only had 5 individual runners and 2 winners, so that wasn't hideous. But I've actually got quite a few young horses and a few flat horses. There's... So we're really busy. We've got about 15 in work at the moment, which is sort of a record for us. And we're just chipping away. And there are a couple of horses there that could head towards the Jericho, but I'm not gonna get too wound up about it. If they get there, they get there. If they don't, then they'll be back next year for the jump season.
Amy, with lockdown and most Melburnians not being able to get out for about a year and a half, they've forgotten where even these places are in Victoria. Might have to get you on places like, you know, Coleraine, Casterton, Warrnambool, even Pakenham, the local cafes and bakeries. People will be wanting to get out and find out. I'm sure you've had a bit of an option over the last couple of years, if not before that. Give everyone a bit of a run down the places to stop in. Might be able to make some income on the side out of that.
I've got all the places. Western Victoria, I have it covered.
What's the number one bakery? Is it the one at what's that town on the outskirts of Geelong on the Hamilton
Inverlee.
Highway? Inverlee. Is it the Inverlee Bakery?
No, I like the one in Dunkeld. I love the one in Dunkeld. I can't think of the name of it, but it's on the corner there in Dunkeld, and they make their own fairy floss and their own fudge and that sort of stuff as well. They're insane. Also, the bakery in Mortlake is very good.
Mortlake. I was going to say Mortlake. I'd stopped off. Is it the Clark's one that you stop off at?
Yeah. Fantastic. Really lovely people there too. They always ask how your horses went. Yeah, they're really nice.
Good country folk.
There's a good one at Turriden.
Oh, yeah. Turriden Bakery's nice.
Yep. Oh, seriously, I think post-COVID, these will become very, very active conversations. Don't worry about that. Amy, thank you so much. I know you've had the rug pulled on you for Oakbank. Hopefully not, but at the moment, that's the way it seems to be. But I can imagine flying agent dashing around Oakbank. It'd be an amazing sight. So fingers crossed that Sandy McGregor and the crew can get the job done with their salvage plan.
Yeah, I would really, really like to win a Vondusa, if that's all right.
Okay, all right. Well, it's on the list.
We'll get there. No,
and if you want, at Harndorf's got very, very good German sausages too, by the way. So
Harndorf is the most beautiful.
And Vienna coffee.
Beautiful little town.
Vienna coffee with a bit of Irish coffee in there as well.
It's like a little postcard town, isn't it? It's got the novelty shops and all that sort of stuff. It's almost like a Pleasantville or something for Germans, you know?
It's so nice. And you wouldn't want to stay there too many times a year because you get used to it. You want to go there once a year, twice a year, and believe how magical it is every time you go there. It's just, I love Harndorf. It's just beautiful.
Well, you better go and win the Vondusa. So we'll see. We'll keep an update on the situation with the jumps, and fingers crossed and toes crossed that it can be rescued. Ames, good on you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much. And thank you for shedding light on the situation so that everyone that doesn't particularly know about jump racing.
Good on you, Amy.
Cheers. Thanks, guys.
Amy McDonald there. A terrific, it's a funny story too, Simone. She and Amy Johnson, Amy Yagi now, are best friends, and people always get them confused. So Amy Yagi gets phone calls for Amy Johnson. Sorry, for Amy McDonald steals her horses and vice versa, and it all evens out in the end. No, that's not true, but they are great mates, and obviously Amy Yagi will be very upset about the Oakbank situation as well, with her jumps pedigree as well. Dan and Simone, we've come to the end.
Again, another great show.
It wasn't pothole free, the road this morning. There were a few issues.
Yes. A few bumps on the way.
Especially when Simone absolutely cracked it. But I'm looking forward to the Guineas. I'm looking forward to Bendigo tonight. What's the next big, great, wonderful, amazing thing happening in the world of greyhounds, Simone?
Well, Bendigo Cup Eats tonight. So really looking forward to that. The final will be next Saturday. And like I mentioned, the Great Chase. So Bendigo Cup, a great carnival down there, over $300,000 over the course of a couple of weeks that Troy Harley has mustered up there and doing a terrific job. So looking forward to those cup eats tonight. But have I got enough time? A little something you might find very interesting.
Okay, go on then.
For 20 seconds. All the horse world would know the brand Ariat, A-R-I-A-T, shoes, clothes. It's a very, very horsey brand. I found out where the name came from this week. I had my Ariat top on at Pony Club. It's not an acronym, but it is the last five letters of Secretariat's name, and their little logo is three horseshoes that are intertwined that represents his triple crown. I was blown away by this. I like these little snippets of facts, and I can't believe I've been wearing Ariat clothes for a long, long time and never known the origin of the name. So there we go.
You've blown us away with that one.
It's Dan, quite interesting.
No, it is quite interesting in a way. Dan, I'll catch you in a couple of hours for our little build up to the Guineas Day today.
Yeah, there's a lot to look forward to there, Matt. It'd be a lot of fun. I'll hold you to it.
Simone, you go and cool your jets. Go out there and play with the dogs and first crush, and we'll catch you next week.
Yeah, we will. See you guys.
See ya.